Before we get into today's episode, I want to invite you on a unique spiritual journey this Advent season. It's called Journey to Bethlehem, and it's a free 9-day text message series designed to prepare your heart for Christmas. Starting on December the 17th, and each day leading up to Christmas, you'll receive a short reflective message pointing you to the hope, peace, joy, and love found in the coming of Christ. It's completely free and a great way to keep your focus on Jesus this season. Sign up today at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now here's today's podcast.
This New Year's Eve, get ready for the ultimate crossover celebration. The Liberty Church Global invites you to join us at one of our three events in either London at the O2 Intercontinental, the Grand Hotel in Birmingham, or at the Landmark Centre, Lagos, Nigeria. Join Dr. Shola Fola-Alade and an incredible lineup of guest artists, including Sumi Sola Agbebi, Dare Justified, Prince Emmanuel, and many more. London, Birmingham, or Lagos, you're covered. Start your 2026 with a bang. Doors open at 8 p.m. in the UK and 10 p.m. in Lagos. Head to tlccrossover.com/radio now to grab your free tickets. Three cities, one unforgettable night. Register for your free tickets. tlccrossover.com/radio now.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis Podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
Well, I am absolutely delighted to be joined today by Charlie Reader, a recent graduate of Oxford University who earned a first-class degree in English literature and language. And Charlie's profound interest in the concept of Sehnsucht was explored extensively in his dissertation. And we're going to be talking about this theme, as well as sharing some of the context for a paper that he presented at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. The title of Charlie's paper there was Sing About the Hidden Country, Longing in Spirits in Bondage. Charlie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ruth. It's great to be here.
Oh, well, I feel like there's so much to talk about with your dissertation, with the paper, but I think before we even unpack some of this stuff around what Lewis meant by Sehnsucht, whether I'm pronouncing it right, what that word even means, would you share a little bit about how you first encountered C.S. Lewis, Charlie?
Absolutely, yeah. So I began reading C.S. Lewis soon after I became a Christian, which was just before I went to university, and I heard a lot about him in sermons in church. It was quoted in YouTube videos and that kind of thing. I then went to university, studied English at St. Hilda's. By that time, I was really interested in, and so when I got to my dissertation and had to choose what to do it on, C.S. Lewis was the obvious choice. And I joined the Oxford University C.S. Lewis Society, became a regular attendee there. I also had some personal consultations with Michael Ward as well, which, as you can imagine, was very helpful. So that was the perfect setting, really, to become immersed in Lewis. I'm in Oxford, I'm reading about C.S. Lewis, I'm going to the Lewis Society, I'm hearing and chatting to world-leading experts on Lewis. So everything lined up really well.
And so you'd not encountered Lewis at all before you became a Christian?
That's right, no.
Never even heard of him?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'd watched The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I'd heard that there was something, you know, vaguely connected to Jesus with Aslan, but hadn't read any. I didn't read Narnia growing up or anything like that. So it was amazing to encounter Lewis as a Christian, really, and to see the rich symbolism that's often missed, I suppose.
Yeah. And do you feel like any of Lewis's works played a significant role in your life or your faith journey, or did it just kind of cement what you already knew and had already learned?
Yeah, I suppose a lot of it was cementing or kind of explaining maybe what happened in those years where I was thinking about becoming a Christian. I think the journey that Lewis went on from atheism to theism and theism to Christianity was very similar to what I was thinking about. And the whole reluctance that Lewis talks about, obviously speaking about his conversion to theism, not actually conversion to Christianity, but that reluctance nonetheless was something that I definitely felt, that, you know, I don't actually want this to be true, but I have to be sort of intellectually honest with the evidence in front of me. And so, yeah, it was really helpful just to, yeah, help me understand what was going on as well.
And were there particular moments on your journey that led to a definitive moment where you would say you became a Christian, or was it like a cumulative series of events that gradually led you to Christianity?
Yeah, I think it was definitely a gradual process. I was having chats with my friend about the existence of God, and looked at a variety of evidence, and, you know, I remember going on long walks with him and trying to convince him really that you know, there wasn't a God, and it obviously backfired massively, because I at some point did believe in a creator, that I there has to be some original, or there had to be some first cause, a intelligent designer, and it didn't seem natural for me to believe that we had just popped out of nothingness from sort of random unguided processes. So yeah, I suppose after that I then looked into lots of other religions and looked into some of the Bible, but saw that there was something distinctive about Christianity, and the idea of grace made sense to me. I can pay for my own shortcomings, and I started to see myself in this cosmic story of falling short of a perfect standard, facing judgment, and then eventually realizing my need to be rescued. And so I asked God to save me and to change me. So that's kind of how it happened.
Brilliant. And as you say, so many parallels there with C.S. Lewis and Alistair McGrath, as it so happens.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I often think about that when I'm listening in as well.
Yeah, because he didn't encounter Lewis, same as you, until afterwards, really, when people were like, oh, stop asking me questions, just read some C.S. Lewis,
yes,
here he is.
Exactly.
He can answer all your questions.
Yeah.
Charlie, do you have a favourite C.S. Lewis book or quotation or work of Lewis, if it's not too hard to whittle down, and why are they your favourite?
Yeah, it would have to be The Weight of Glory. When I was reading that for the first time in the Weight Centre, actually, I thought it was such a beautiful description of human nature, of the human condition. And Lewis just describes the human condition in such a relatable, beautiful and compelling and elegant way that seemed to really make sense of how I feel, but also gets me excited as well for the future. So it would have to be that, I think.
Charlie, you're a young guy. You decided to focus on C.S. Lewis in your studies. There are lots of young people who are still reading C.S. Lewis today, and in many ways are in a completely different context to what Lewis was writing into. Why do you think he still resonates long, long after his death? Why is he still relevant to a 21st century?
Well, the abolition of man has been seen by many as being very prophetic, and it's the perfect work, really, to speak to society now, which seems to have taken morality into their own hands, and with truth being subjective and that kind of thing. I think the case for objective morality that Lewis makes in The Abolition of Man is a very timely thing to be thinking about, and likewise that hideous strength, which lots of people view alongside The Abolition of Man, is also, I think, very timely, particularly with experimentation on humans in the book, and, you know, the redefining of humanity. I think that's something that is definitely relevant to today, with the rise of AI and the transhumanism movement. I think that's definitely something that is relevant. But from my point of view as well, longing, I think just from a timeless perspective. You know, read The Weight of Glory and tell me that that's not the most beautiful and fitting depiction of the human condition. I think that would also be something that is applicable to every generation, I should think. Yeah.
And Charlie, you obviously encountered Lewis once you'd become a Christian, but do you feel like now you've read so much of his content, a lot of which was in his own personal books, which must have been incredible. Do you think there's anything that you read that would have been actually super relevant for you on your journey towards Christianity?
Yeah, I think Mere Christianity is a great place to start. I think that was the first book I read as a Christian. So I was still battling with a few things, really. But I think that would be really helpful for anyone thinking through the claims of the Christian faith, what to do with them, objective morality, all these things like that. I think that was a really helpful book for me.
If you could ask C.S. Lewis one question, you might have thought about this, or it might be something that you got so many questions. Do you have any idea what it would be?
I mean, it'd be interesting to ask him if Michael Ward was right with Planet Narnia.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
As we near the end of the year, I want to pause and thank God for how he's worked through Premier Insight in 2025. From honest conversations on Unbelievable to the wisdom of N.T. Wright, this ministry has helped thousands grow in faith, defend truth, and engage culture with grace. But none of this happens without you. Right now, Premier Insight faces a $106,497 funding gap that must be closed by December the 31st. And thanks to a generous $25,000 challenge grant, your gift today will go even further to equip believers and reach seekers in 2026. Visit premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis to give now. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. And now back to today's episode.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. Well, Charlie, let's talk about your research for your dissertation, because as part of your research, you got to go to the C.S. Lewis Library at the Marion Wade Centre in Wheaton. What was that like? That must have been spectacular.
That was amazing. Yeah, I got a grant from St. Hilda's College to go over there. And yeah, it was the perfect setting to read lots about Lewis, but see archives and have hands-on experience, really, with Lewis's diaries, and look at Lewis's Bible and Book of Common Prayer and see all the notes and underlinings. It was amazing, really. So wow. It was fantastic. Yeah.
And was there anything that particularly stuck out to you? You say that you got to read his Bible with obviously his own markings in it. Was there anything that you read either in that or the Book of Common Prayer that really struck you and I guess helped in your work as well?
Yeah, well, there was lots of small, exciting things that I saw. So, for example, the line of Judah was underlined and I was thinking, okay, I see what's going on here. But also, you know, at the back of Lewis's Book of Common Prayer, on the blank pages at the back, there was a series of numbers from 1 to 139, 1, 2, 8, 19, 84, all the way up to 139. And I have no evidence for this, but I like to think that there were Lewis's favourite psalms, which is... I guess makes sense from the point of view from, obviously we know Lewis's favourite psalm was Psalm 19, and that was written down. So I guess that's one thing that supports the claim. But no, it was very helpful for me looking into longing as well. Psalms like Psalm 87, longing for the courts of the Lord, was helpful to see how longing was borrowed from the Psalms as well, and Lewis's experience of the Psalms, which he obviously wrote about a lot in Reflections on Psalms.
Well, let's talk about that longing, because he does talk about longing, as you say, in lots of his work. This is a huge question, but what does Lewis mean by longing, and why do you think it is such a significant feature in so many of his different books?
Well, Lewis's autobiography, as we know, was called Surprised by Joy. And joy means longing. Joy means longing, or it represents this inconsolable ache for something beyond. And it was a very painful, transcendent sort of pang or stab that Lewis described he had from childhood. And it came to him in various ways. It talks about the memory of his past, his experience of the natural world, experiencing beautiful things, reading, enjoying relational beauty. And this all communicated a yearning that he had for something outside of his human experience.
Charlie, Lewis often uses a German word, Sehnsucht, if I'm pronouncing that rightly. Huge apologies to any of our German listeners if I've totally butchered that word. But could you define what that word means for us, Charlie?
Yeah, I can try. Sehnsucht comes from the German Romantic tradition. I actually did ask a German friend of mine what it meant. And she said that the Zen construction means looking for something. And the Sucht means searching for an object. But the Sucht can also come from a German word meaning addiction, which explains this sort of frustrated craving that Lewis describes he had when he talks about longing.
Yeah, because you mentioned that in your dissertation in reference to the Pilgrim's Regress and John's kind of obsession with wanting to experience this. And in many ways, that obviously echoes what Lewis was feeling, doesn't it?
That's right. Yeah. John, the protagonist, talks about this sort of, well, it's all about the longing for an island. And he describes this insatiable sort of dose of satisfaction throughout the novel, but that's never quite fulfilled until he gets to the island, which is a picture of something else, as we know. So yeah, it was definitely something that is kind of reflective of Lewis's own conversion story as well.
And why was it that this was a particular area that you wanted to focus on, even in your dissertation? Obviously, you were studying English, not theology, but there's clearly a bit of overlap there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, well, when I went to the Wade Centre, I still didn't know what I wanted to do my dissertation on specifically within Lewis. I knew that I wanted to do something about biblical allusion, but I quickly realized that was an enormous topic and had to narrow it down somehow. So ironically, it was when I was reading Lewis's non-Christian work, Spirits in Bondage, that I thought, wow, there's actually quite a lot of biblical allusion here, which is surprising. And it's those articulations of longing felt familiar. So I thought that was really interesting. And I followed up these leads and saw that there was some fascinating parallels to his Christian work. And that formed the basis of my argument, really.
Charlie, you mentioned Spirits in Bondage there, and that was where you saw that actually that was the beginning of his longing. Would you just give us a little bit of context for Spirits in Bondage? Because I feel like it's not a work we hear a huge amount talked about, is it?
That's right. Yeah, Spirits in Bondage was actually Lewis's first published work. He's an atheist at this point. It was published just after the war in 1919. And the title, Spirits in Bondage, is parodying the Bible. It's referencing a letter in the New Testament, which is a verse often Christians find quite tricky, which talks about Christ going to hell and preaching to the spirits in prison, spirits in bondage. And the focus, this is also the focus of an old English poem, the Harrowing of Hell, which Lewis would have been familiar with. And it's also in the Apostles' Creed as well, which Lewis also would have been aware of when attending any mandatory church services. So that's one reference. Another reference is it's also referring to a section in Paradise Lost, which falls in a section where Satan is rallying the sort of troops in hell, infernal pit shall never hold celestial spirits in bondage, is the quote. So it's a rebellion against God, which is maybe a picture of what Lewis is trying to do in Spirits in Bondage, is leading a rebellion against the divine.
And he wrote it, if I can do my maths correctly, in 1919, which makes him 20, right? He's pretty young to sort of have published his first
works. That's right, yeah. Puts us to shame, doesn't it?
And this work was published under a pseudonym as well, wasn't it? Clive, his first name, Hamilton, his mother's maiden name. So went under Clive Hamilton. And I think, unlike so many of his other works, it actually received not that many good reviews, and so I think the reception was a slight disappointment for C.S. Lewis. So perhaps it was maybe a good thing that it was published under Clive Hamilton. But why has Spirits in Bondage been ignored by some Lewis critics? Because you'd have thought if it's his first work, it would be quite an important one.
Yeah, well, one of those critics is John Bremer, who wants to separate pre-Christian and Christian Lewis. And he says that it's because, you know, these are poems written at different stages of Lewis's life, and so they need to be treated as if they're written by different men. And I think lots of critics would also say that it might undermine Lewis's sort of position, or embarrass his role as a Christian apologist. So that's maybe one reason why they sought to kind of, you know, not really talk about Spirits in Bondage in modern studies. But obviously, this is very surprising to me, looking into Spirits in Bondage in the Wade Center and seeing that there are so many biblical nods and echoes and parallels to his later Christian work.
Charlie, what is Lewis seeming to be longing for in Spirits in Bondage?
Yeah, so this is what interested me the most when I read Spirits in Bondage. It was the reason, obviously it's a very charged work, as we've talked about, but what interested me the most was the reason behind this anger. And lots of people have made the point that Lewis is angry at God for allowing World War I to happen, which makes sense. It was written just after the war. But I think the preface tells us a lot more. Lewis has his speaker being angry at God for creating human beings with desires, with longings, for something that can never be fulfilled. And it's fascinating that one of these metaphorical images that he describes is to say that it's like looking for a country that can never be found, the hidden country fresh, which is the title of my dissertation and my talk. It's this frustrated longing for that country that actually bookends the whole work as well. It's in the preface to Spirits in Bondage, and it falls right at the end of the work in the poem Death in Battle.
And some of it is pretty brutal, isn't it? I'm just going to read some of the lines from this is from De Profundis. Come, let us curse our master ere we die, for all our hopes in endless ruin lie. The good is dead, let us curse God most high. That is so, so different, obviously, from some of his more Christian apologetic writing. What are we supposed to do with passages like that, Charlie?
Yeah, it is heavy, and it's, again, parodying the Bible. De Profundis is Latin for out of the depths, which is ironically alluding to Psalm 130, a typical psalm that Christians throughout the ages would pray to ask for God's help. But Lewis is using it here to rebel and reject God rather than asking for his help. So what are we to do with them? Well, I think, again, the longing in even in poems like this is really interesting. I think we get an idea of what he's longing for in this poem as well, because he talks about he's thirsting for the right, and he's long seeking for the light. And again, when I was reading that, I thought that there are some clear Christian parallels here, and clear parallels to his later Christian work in Narnia. And you think about Reepy Cheep's longing for Aslan's country in The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, and the sea that tastes like drinkable light. So I was seeing that there was something going on here with the thirst that's there, even in Lewis's atheist non-Christian work.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.